It is time for the Media Beat. Let's see if David Tarachuk is there. David, you there?
I'm here. I'm so glad to be here with you.
Well, then we're glad to have you.
We're very glad to have you here.
We're always glad to have you. First, we have to talk about a sartorial decision, however. And we also have to wish you happy birthday.
Well, that's kind of you. Yes. Another year, and I'm still upright.
Should I sing happy birthday?
Well, I'm vertical, put it that way.
Should I sing happy birthday to you or spare you that?
Oh, please not. Please not.
Do you know, I have for years tried to say, please not, please not. And, you know, the great thing about you being a Libra and Marshall being a Scorpio is that sometimes it doesn't make a bloody bit of difference. But I have a question. It's a media-related question. So, there, as you know, of course, because this is something that you actually keep tabs on, there's been a, this is one of my favorite expressions, spot of bother over it. With Jamal Khashoggi. And what I would like to ask you about, and really and truly, I mean, everybody else is covering their aspect of it, but the bit that's doubly troublesome is that it's not as if a lot of people don't know what happened and haven't talked about it prior to it being presented for public consumption. And I'm just really trying to figure out what the rules of the road are in the, let's just say, creation of a word that shouldn't be used but always is, narrative.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess everybody has their own approaches to difficult stories. I mean, the point about this difficult story is that the journalist, the opinion writer, Jamal Khashoggi, Saudi Arabian, goes to a Saudi Arabian consular building in a country far from, well, not so far, but excuse me, let me start again.
Feel free.
To a consular building in another country, Turkey, but it's diplomatic territory. It's Saudi Arabian territory, technically, according to most diplomatic conventions throughout the world. He's there to get some papers to help with his remarriage to a Turk, and he disappears. And lots of evidence starts to accrue the way that it can, certainly through in diplomatic circles in a capital city like Istanbul. And it emerges as compelling evidence, it seems, from to judge by the way it's been published, that he was kept there against his will and may even have been killed, and may even, this is one of the more gruesome aspects of the story, had his body dismembered. Meanwhile, of course, the Saudi authorities claim that he walked out of the building of his own free will, although there's no video evidence on the surveillance cameras to prove that. And now we have this rip-roaring, controversial story. What are the rules of the road of establishing, you know, a through line, a believable story? The facts, ma'am, to quote Sergeant Friday, the detective. You know, the rules of the road is you try your best to get the best information possible. And so far, it seems, let's say that the preponderance of evidence, anyway, seems to suggest, and the actual quality of the evidence, the provenance of the information, if you like, Turkish authorities and including now, as we hear more coming out, United States intelligence operatives have chipped in with what they've been able to discover too, off the record, of course, and we have what we might call, if it were a court case, a preponderance of evidence now suggesting that it's the Turkish authorities accounts of this, which is much more likely to be true than the Saudi Arabians. But of course, you know, ultimately, we don't actually really know what happened to this really rather brave, sometimes possibly reckless journalist, who certainly, you know, is now a symbol for the kind of journalism that we all wish would predominate generally. He was a thoughtful and reflective critic of the current Saudi Arabia regime. And the Saudi Arabia regime might be in the mood for a certain kind of reform, but it's not lost any of its viciousness, which is inherited from its predecessors.
Well, the other complication along the way is that certain things don't change. In other words, regimes, the public face of regimes do change sometimes, but that doesn't mean that the basic, really running out of diplomatic, that everything changes. How about that? Just the public,
nothing changes completely, and certainly not in a very tradition-bound society like the Saudi Arabian, the Saudi Arabian royal family essentially is still in control. Salman, the new crown prince, is credited with making all sorts of modernizing changes, but
this wouldn't be one of them.
When it comes to criticism, it's not treated in any modern or liberal-minded way. It's very much the opposite.
Well, those changes were obviously made to seal the three-card Mahdi, to put up a face, a very public face on one side, and then try to go through the back door and maintain your stronghold the other way.
But that is religion. Sure. I mean, yes, and I guess my question to David and to you is, right, so we know this.
Yeah.
This is.
Well, we can. Yeah, we have very good reason to know this. Yeah, yeah.
So
we haven't established it fact by fact, but the predominance of evidence, as I say, says that this is what's happened to the unfortunate journalist.
And so then, what I wonder is, in the nature of context provision, for people who aren't above a certain age and don't know, I'm not talking about this particular event. I'm talking about the broader management of dissidents, shall we say?
Of the to and fro of discourse. Yeah,
right.
What happens in regimes all the time is that they can rule by pressure, by autocracy, by viciousness, by cruelty, all of those things. But there is always going to be protest of some kind, or differences of opinion at the least. And in this case, you know, Khashoggi was a journalist with a fine sense of the temper of his times, and certainly the pulse of his country. And, you know, what we would think of as very modest criticism that he would write, both in Middle East outlets and for Western ones too, like the Washington Post, these were moderate and temperate expressions of almost guidance. One of the things he was trying to suggest is, if you want to reform, here are good ways of doing it, and productive ways. And of course, that didn't go down very well either. Not outright protest, not measured criticism. The Saudi authorities are clearly in a mind to accept neither of those.
You know, what's interesting is, and you just pointed that, it's not like he was a radical. It's not like he was a protester. He was, for a long time, a supporter of the royal family and the government. But he, like anybody else, wrote about change. And he wrote, like you just said, his writings turned to ways that the Saudi royal family could make change better. It wasn't like he was a radical. That's the whole thing I think that's surprising about this, is that is that he wasn't a radical. Was he drifting away from the mainstream of what the royal family would want? Yeah, but I mean,
criticism. This is where I, you know, my beady little mind speaks up, and I'm not. I'm sure it's not agree, but in the view of the entity being criticized, criticism is criticism, and trouble is trouble, and they have their ways of dealing with. We have our ways, my whole.
So what are you trying to say about that?
Trying to say is that these ways are more prevalent than it would appear is being presented.
I think.
I mean, you know that, and David knows that, and I know that.
I think a lot of people know about it,
think your average 30-year-old knows that?
Your average 30-year-old. I think your average 30-year-old does know about it. I really do.
My unscientific sampling has showed no. But
how many people has your unscientific?
Four.
Well, I don't think
that's why I called it unscientific.
I wouldn't call that. I think you would be arrested if you were
to canvass. I think a broad range of people under a certain age. It would be interesting what you did find out. I have a feeling that 30-year-olds are fair idea of how the world works these days if they pay attention.
That's right. If you talk to college people, non-college people, working people, career people, I think if you get a big enough sample, I'm not saying it's going to be dramatically a lot, but I think well more than 50% of 30-year-olds have a grasp
on Wahhabism.
Yeah, I really do. I really do.
Okay.
Well, they know what. I don't know. I'm hazarding a guess here, but I think they know that Saudi Arabia does not have a good reputation for human rights. Let's put it.
That's a good way to do it.
That much they will know. Yeah.
Right, and they will know that they were highly involved in 9/11.
They will know. Well,
possibly.
They will know that. They will also know that the United States is highly, and this is the whole thing, this is just in this country, is highly intertwined with selling
for years
to make money on selling military ties. And they will know that things were not so great with Saudi Arabia in this country under Barack Obama. I mean, there's all sorts of things they will know. Will they know everything? No. But I think a lot of 30-year-olds will have a pretty good picture, scope of the picture. I'm not saying perfect, but I'm saying pretty good.
Yeah, and now they got the backdrop. Against that backdrop, they now have to confront the information that the present president of this country doesn't want to get into any discussion of sanctions against that country because of this ginormous arms business relationship that we have. A new contract, going through right this minute. Business of in the billions, as it is not to be trifled with in the mind of this president. And nothing is like, I'm not taking a huge risk in predicting this, but the United States authorities will not exert any sanctions against Saudi Arabia because of the Khashoggi case, and we know why. It's already been said quite out in the open. This is a business relationship that President Trump doesn't want to trifle with.
And this was a risk. This makes it a really interesting risk on the part of the kingdom.
It's almost like this is going to sound terrible to say, but it's almost like a poker game. And instead of having four people at the table, you have four countries. You have Saudi Arabia, you have the United States, you have Turkey, and then you have, well, I would say the rest of the Middle East involved in it. And it's almost like a poker game, and who's going to blink first?
Well, plus you've also got these other elements. You've got the pastor in Turkey. There are three or four different, you're absolutely right, there are four different countries involved. Plus, there was a little known, I mentioned this to Marshall David, you probably saw it. There was a little known, just this past Saturday, there was a weird news item that just said there had been an intruder. Who's the Turk in Maryland or something? What's his name, do you know?
The name is escaping
right,
me now.
Right, the name escapes
yes,
me too.
A Turkish cleric who was accused of being involved in the coup and maintains he wasn't, the Turkish coup, and maintains he wasn't. And the Turks want him extradited, and so far the United States is resisting that.
So you've got these all these different things. So it's another thing is you can watch the and then the other thing that I find absolutely comical is that the Congress, not this part, but what was the name of the act that Congress invoked to find out what's going on?
You're going to have to tell me.
Okay, Magnitsky. Now, have we heard this word?
Oh, Magnitsky. Oh, sure.
Have
yeah,
we heard this?
Magnitsky.
I've just, you know, but again, this is what gets my brain, you know, burbling along the way.
Well, what's burbling? The fact that it's a Russian name?
No. Just because if anyone was listening to, you know, the Magnitsky Act was supposedly what the discussion in Trump Tower was.
Absolutely,
so,
yes. Yeah, it's to do so with the regulation through sanction type
right.
measures of diplomatic relations that go wrong, and a way of exerting pressure on countries that you want to exert pressure on. But yes, I mean, we are looking at a standoff, an international standoff of which in the end is about face, and so much of diplomacy is about saving face and preventing the loss of face, and that's what we'll see work out here. I mean, I'm not sure if any completely clinching evidence is likely to emerge. I mean, I can only see one of two ways of it being clinching. One, that he suddenly miraculously reappears, or we get eyewitness accounts, or still less likely, I guess, video, showing that he was indeed killed. It's gruesome to dwell on these possibilities, but I think from now on it's going to be a propaganda kind of skirmish, maybe a full-scale battle between the countries, and we're not going to know affirmatively who's in the right. I don't think.
Here's the wheel.
No, I think, and as we started off saying, the preponderance of evidence is pretty clear. Yeah. The Saudis were up to their old tricks again.
Now, here's another interesting sidelight of this. There's going to be four different responses to this, to whatever happens. There's going to be the media, the Washington Post, and the media. What are they looking for out of the conclusion of this? Number two, what is Turkey looking for out of this whole skirmish? Three, what is our administration looking for out of this tough and tumble? And number four, how does Saudi Arabia, which I think is almost impossible, deal with three different entities? And never mind, this is not even including the family. Make them number five. How does Saudi Arabia deal and satisfy, or even coming close to satisfy, any one of those four, the family, Turkey, our administration, and the Washington Post representing the press?
Well, I would proffer that they're likely to have the least trouble with the United States administration. Yeah,
unfortunately, yes. That's the sad point of the deal.
There are generations and generations of U.S. administrations who have, in one or two cases, walked literally hand in hand with the Saudi Arabian royal family, so I think that they're going to have least trouble from the White House.
You know, all you have to do to look back in our history is look how we supported the Shah of Iran, and then see 50, 60, 70 years later how that turned out.
Yes, and drop in the three-letter word there as well, oil.
Right.
You'll see a theme.
You'll see a theme.
Now, things are going to go. Yes.
Do we have another
Thank
couple
God
minutes?
The Saudis don't have a lot of coal.
do we have another couple of minutes?
That's a sick joke. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no.
But it's a good one.
Yes, we have
about
4 minutes.
I told you he was a Scorpio, not a Libra.
We have about 4 minutes.
Can we talk about the Soyuz Can we talk about the astronauts?
I think it's absolutely amazing that most of American media, but I will give Brian Williams credit. He led with that last night.
Yeah, but you were obviously up watching him.
But he led with that last night about what happened.
Sorry, his rocket misfiring. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we've got holes in the space. Never mind. And a criminal probe being opened. But here's the good news. That they actually, you know, even my incompetent physics mind can see that that was a real fast trip back to Earth. I mean, what that, the angle.
The technology, here's the amazing thing about that story. The technology of their of the way they escaped certain death dates back to the first capsules that were sent in space, which means when something happens to the booster and you're miles and miles and miles above the atmosphere, your only recourse is to eject and hope that your capsule comes down in the right direction and that the parachutes open. It's that dated of technology.
Yes, it takes us back to the days of those little mercury capsules, I think they were bobbing around in the South Pacific Sea. Yeah, extraordinary.
But you look at that and you say to yourself, they survived. And then you look at the technology, and you look at the technology, the space shuttle. When something goes wrong with something so technologically different and something goes wrong, there's very little you can do, as we've discovered with a couple of the space shuttles. When something goes wrong with something with old-fashioned technology, guess what? It works. That's the amazing thing to look at it. It absolutely works.
The duct tape solution.
Absolutely amazing.
There is something to be said for mechanics versus technology.
It's absolutely amazing.
If you have a knob that you can turn, you've got a better shot than sitting there trying to connect by Skype.
It's not 100%, but it gave them a shot, and everything went right.
Landed in the desert.
They were sitting there talking about it after it all happened.
Yeah, and it's just that's just, you know, that's a remarkably happy ending for something that would otherwise make headlines. It's just the sad news.
Well, yeah, it did make headlines, but yeah, I think it was so soft pedaled the extraordinariness of it all, and the sort of the heroic measures that were employed to turn it into a good outcome after a disaster. You know, I guess there will have to be lots and lots of post-morteming on why the disaster happened. But it's good to savor in the first 24 hours or so the triumph of actually avoiding two deaths.
But how do they get the guys who are up there back down?
There is already a capsule attached to the space station where if they can't get supplies up there in time, they get in a capsule, it comes down the old-fashioned way once again, it gets into the Earth's atmosphere, and a parachute goes out, and it comes down. There's that same technology is in the space station.
So any car manufacturers, could you put the spare tire back, please? Thank you very much, David Tereshchuk, the Media Beat.
Thank you.